and Formula One is underway in Melbourne. Good reaction time at the front of the field for Carlos Sainz, but his path is blocked by Max Verstappen, who has the lead. Norris maintains third, Verstappen, Sainz, and then it is Lando Norris. A clean route through for all of those in the field. It'll be 19 now that Zhou Guanyu joins the race. It's Verstappen with the getaway that he needed. Then it's Sainz, Norris, Leclerc stayed ahead of Piastri. It's getting very, very tight between Perez and George Russell, and it's Russell who finds his way to hang on to the place. He moves up to sixth position, Perez down to seventh. It's as you were ahead. Here we go, the best chance to get past his old teammate. These two started life in Formula One together at Toro Rosso, and they're about to go wheel to wheel. You're watching a Ferrari take the lead of the Grand Prix. Carlos Sainz, first opportunity offered up, first opportunity taken, and the man who didn't race in the last round leads in round three. The smoke.
It is smoke out of the back of Verstappen's car. For the first time in 2 years, reliability could be a question mark.
Can you believe what we're seeing? The man who has finished every Grand Prix since he retired from this one in 2022 has smoke from the rear of the car. Max Verstappen has an issue. He's still very close to the lead of the Grand Prix, but he might not have a tyre left at the end of it.
Where's that smoke coming from? Is it something on the rear right?
It's gone! It's gone! The man who was trying to win 10 Grand Prix in a row for the second time in his Formula One career will not continue the run. A fire at the back of the car. The dreams of victory gone.
Smoke. A fire.
He has had Formula One set to easy, week in, week out, but he will not see the flag. He's retiring from the Australian Grand Prix, and in Melbourne, it's game on to win the Australian Grand Prix. And the world championship leader chasing title number 4, the first retirement against all expectations, and his 43 race finishing streak in Formula One comes to a fiery end.
Yeah, I've had an engine failure.
Oh, okay.
Engine failure.
Hamilton out of the race. Our second retirement of the day. It's Verstappen, and now it's Hamilton. And Mercedes have had a few worries about the power unit. This time, it's taken out their 7-time world champion driver. The virtual safety car is now deployed. That was always coming. And everyone reduces their pace. If you pit under the virtual safety car, you save yourself about 7 seconds.
But look at the way Hamilton's parked as he gets out of the car. That'll take just seconds to push behind the wall. Well, there goes the engine in quite a severe way. Sudden cut for Hamilton. Second retirement. And Alonso, if he can scramble to the pit lane, will save himself 6.5-7 seconds of pit stop time.
Alonso looking for that benefit. It is a Ferrari 1-2 on track. Then Piastri and Lando Norris. Look at how much it pays you back if you pit under the virtual safety car. Fernando Alonso says, thank you very much. You can get rid of that virtual safety car now, chaps. We're ready to go racing again. We look at the live speeds of Russell and Perez building up through the gears, heading to 190 miles per hour and heading to an overtake. If Perez can just get close enough, does he have enough road to sweep around the outside? There is your answer. He did it in the final meters of the corner, but he got the move done. Russell, does he launch one to the inside? Can he launch one to the inside by way of response? The answer is no. Perez, P6, and that's another pass for him. He will go chasing Fernando Alonso. We know that in the final stages of this run, that Fernando Alonso will not have the speed of Perez. In fact, Alonso darting out of the way. Doesn't want to get mixed up in the Mexican driver's race. And now that is fifth position for Perez, who has a bit of clear air. He's going to try and do something about the four in front of him.
There's the call. This is not going to be popular amongst the Aussies. But he's going to pull over and Norris will sweep through for third.
Piastri playing the team game. Norris is on tyres that are 5 laps younger than Oscar Piastri. Charles Leclerc covering off the two quick drivers behind. It's going to be tight. Perez, Alonso chasing. 2.1 second stop was so important. This is going to give an opportunity now to Fernando Alonso. The three of them together. and Alonso's got a great opportunity. Which way does he go? Leclerc maintains track position, and Alonso, despite soaring to the left, to the right, can't find his way past Perez. And that was closer than Ferrari would have wanted. When you see Verstappen go out of the race, you know there's a point on offer for teams who need to take their chance. And Alex Albon running as close as he dared to the back of the Haas, but not on the side of the racetrack that he needed to be. And Hülkenberg scampers clear. All the while this goes on, Tsunoda with RB's most important pit stop of the year so far, and he's back out ahead of both.
They're so dangerous.
This is how Oscar Piastri was able to take the position on the outside and then shown part of the racetrack he hasn't seen before, then given room by Fernando Alonso. This is Pierre Gasly and Yuki Tsunoda. Bomb move. And taking the place away from his old teammate and good friend. Just out of the points, these two. Kevin Magnussen thinking about the move to the inside. My word. Oh, he's thinking about it from miles back. He is all over the back of the Williams. It's going to be quick again. It's going to be very fast. This time around the outside to take the place. Kevin Magnussen gets the move done. Here, oh, big crash. George Russell with a massive accident at the end of the Grand Prix at turn number 6. And that will end the race as a contest. The virtual safety car is out. George Russell was battling over 6th place, and this is how it came undone.
He got so close to Fernando on the way into the corner. It was just simple dirty air for Russell. And just simply didn't have the airflow over his car. Lost a load of downforce, turned in and had a major oversteer all the way to the barriers.
What a performance! What a comeback! A Ferrari 1-2 headed by Carlos Sainz, who wins the Australian Grand Prix.
Yes, we have it. P1, baby, P1. It's a baby shark move.
Good job, Carlos.
This is amazing. Thank you, guys. I like it, roller coaster.
It is.
I like it. Yeah, incredible.
Was a smooth operator.
Oh, I forgot. A smooth operator.
This is the Outlap F1 podcast featuring America's own Cody, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap. Welcome on in, Outlap F1 Nation. This is season 6. This is episode number 8 of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's the 2024 Australian Grand Prix review show, and you've got Andy and I'm along with Cody tonight. Cody, it's good to see you, sir. Dee is, I think, handling what I would call an important matter of state. I think her favorite college basketball team is playing right now at the moment with March Madness, so we're going to give her the night on off. So, Cody, did you brave the late night, early morning and watch this thing live, or did you have to wait till the morning?
Oh, yeah. I watched it live, and I actually cracked myself up a little bit because I was getting all super psyched up and getting all set up on the TV and everything. And I flip it on, and it's on the F1 TV. It's like qualifying highlights, and I'm like, what the hell? Where's the race stream? I was off by an hour. I thought I started at 10.
Oh, okay.
So then I had to sit there like being all hyped up for like another hour, being like, come on.
Oh, this one actually came up on me kind of fast. Like all of a sudden I realized it's like, oh, wait, it's 10 o'clock. Oh, the pre-race stuff should be starting. I need to get on that. But yeah, I managed to brave it. My body clock isn't too screwed up. At least I don't think so. It's not as bad as Vegas. Vegas is still, I think,
yeah,
the number one.
Or Japan. Japan's going to probably be rough.
Yeah, the next one will be kind of rough too. But so we're going to get into all of the fun of the Australian Grand Prix weekend in just a little bit. And if you found our show, as David Croft would say, welcome along. You can find us on Twitter, X, whatever that platform still is, whatever's left of it. Instagram, we're on there. You can check out some of our short form content on Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and of course, YouTube at Outlap F1 Podcast is the handle. If you're on YouTube and you enjoy what you're hearing and you like what you're seeing, you can do us a solid, click the like and subscribe button. Or if you're on a favorite podcasting app, particularly Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you can leave us a 5-star review. Just as a reminder, we are on our new Apple Podcast thread. So a 5-star review there will help, definitely help us come up a little bit better up in search results, help us get our content to you that much quicker. If you're looking for it and you couldn't find it, just do a quick search for Outlap F1 Podcast. Follow the show like you kind of did before, and then boom, you're all set up just as you were before, getting the latest episodes as we post them on Apple Podcasts. You can email the show, chat now at Outlap F1. We'll take you there. The website still in progress, still under reconstruction. www.outlapf1 will take you there eventually. As just a general thank you and a reminder to everyone in our Outlap F1 Nation, thanks again for continuing to step up. Thanks to Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quinton Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and of course, Jonathan Scott. If you'd like to become a member of the hashtag Outlap F1 Nation, you can see our link in our show notes. It's our anchor page, $5. All goes into making the show better. All goes into investing in new equipment and upgrading the equipment we already have. And just one last quick announcement. You can still use our code OUTLAP with the good folks at Manscaped. That's OUTLAP, OUTLAP, all one word. That'll get you 20% off and free shipping from them. All right. So we will now hop into our Australian Grand Prix weekend that was. We'll start with the headline of the day. Cody, what's your thought here?
So my headline of the day is, if I take a couple weeks off and remove my appendix, can I too be better? I really called it wrong with Carlos Sainz going into this weekend. On the preview, I was thinking he was going to finish something like fifth. I was thinking that he was going to be rusty after missing last race and coming back from surgery to remove his appendix. And holy crap, was I wrong. And I think he did even better than he was expecting. He thought he was going to be a little rusty. And here he comes screaming out of the gate, winning the race, helped a little bit out by some Max Verstappen woes that we'll get into in a bit here. But overall, a fantastic way to come back for Carlos Sainz.
Yeah, mine is kind of in the same vein. And here's my hot take of the night. Someone ought to sign that Sainz guy. He's quick. Wow. Talk about getting up. I mean, 2 weeks ago, this guy's on a surgical table, getting his appendix taken out. And 2 weeks later, bang, and just pretty much the dominant car all weekend. If you really add it all up from the practices on Friday to the race on Sunday, he was the quickest car. He didn't necessarily, we'll talk about qualifying in a minute. He might not have taken the pole, but I think he had the best overall car, best overall package. This was his race to win, and he went out and he won it. Even without the Max Verstappen issues, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, I still think he probably wins this race. I think he was just that much on it, especially early. So, and it would have been one hell of a fight. We were kind of denied, I think, the fight between the two of them, but we'll talk about why in just a little bit. But before we hop back into the race itself, we will flash back to Friday. And we have to talk, we kind of have to set stage a little bit about Friday, because Friday only saw 19 cars. Why were there only 19 cars? Because Alex Albon crashed his Williams, bringing out a red flag, which damaged the chassis and damaged the tub so much so that it could not be repaired, and Williams didn't have a spare one. So they were running kind of the gambit, running the risk of not having an extra tub, in favor of trying to bring more performance parts to the track. What that meant was now Williams was faced with a bit of a no-win situation. What do you do? Do you take your lead driver, Alex Albon, out in favor of Logan Sargeant, a guy who's in his career has scored 1 point? Or do you do the almost unthinkable, something we haven't seen in a long time in Formula One, which is withdraw Logan Sargeant in favor of Alex Albon? So we were, this was kind of the scuttlebutt talk in the middle of the FP2 broadcast at the end of it, was that they didn't realize what was going to go on. Well, next morning, that's exactly what Williams ended up doing. They withdrew Logan Sargeant from the event in favor of Alex Albon Albon raced Logan Sargeant's chassis this weekend. I've seen a whole array of emotions on this from a lot of different angles. But Cody, I'll let you go first. What's your take on what they did, and what was your thought on it?
I understand why they did it, and on paper, it makes sense to do it because Alex Albon, throughout all of last year, grossly outperformed, and Logan Sargeant just hasn't shown anything in the last couple races either to show that he's vastly improved going into the beginning of this season. So I understand that they wanted to maximize their ability to get points or get high, higher midfield positions, because as we've talked about before, with there being, five strong teams, they got to fight for every point they can get. So I understand why they did it. Ultimately though, I think it was a bit of a rotten decision because any confidence that Logan Sargeant might have had left is now going to be gone, because you pretty much went ahead and said, oh, it doesn't matter that Albon was the one who destroyed the car and we don't have a backup. We still are putting our faith in him over you. And so I think it's going to take any wind that was left out of his sails, and he's going to be thinking that he has no chance of rising up within that team to be considered Albon's peer. And he's got to be thinking this is a sign that he's not coming back next year.
Yeah, this was my worry when he first got the drive. I remember being excited. I remember when they first announced it that, he was moving up to F1, assuming he got his super license, which he actually ended up doing. But my fear was he was going to a team that had a lot of internal problems. And Williams is a team, as we kind of intimated it, in the preview, has revealed just the extent of what some of their problems are. That, they had inventory being managed in Excel, and, no real way to update the systems. And James Vowles comes in from Mercedes, which is a big boy team with big boy aspirations and big boy management and big boy systems. And he looks at this and he goes, what the F are you guys doing? So he kind of cleaned house, is in the process of still cleaning house. And part of that was a conscious decision to kind of take this risk at two tracks, Jeddah and here, where the walls are right there. There's no room for error. You're going to go off. You're probably going to destroy a car. So it was a huge risk. I'm sure they were telling both guys, please don't wreck the car. If you're going to wreck the car, do it softly. Well, Alex Albon didn't do that in the first practice session. And then Logan Sargeant almost did it in his own chassis in the second practice session. He went into the same gravel trap and almost had a moment. And I'm sure then James Vowles goes, well, we can't not score anything with any cars, so I'm going to give it to the one I guess I trust more. I've called it, in Star Trek parlance, this is the Kobayashi Maru scenario. There's no way to win. There's no way that you come out of this by winning. All right, so the net result is we had 19 cars go into qualifying after that. So P19, he had some problems all over the course of the weekend. That was Zhao Guanyu in the Kick Sauber. P18, Daniel Ricciardo, ouch, local boy not doing so well. P17 was Pierre Gasly. P16 was Nico Hülkenberg. P15 was Esteban Ocon, actually making it to Q2 for the first time for Alpine. P14 was Kevin Magnussen. P13 was Valtteri Bottas. P12, Alex Albon in the aforementioned Logan Sargeant chassis. P11 was Lewis Hamilton. We got to talk about this. This was a big surprise for Mercedes. The top 10 from 10 to 1. P10 saw Fernando Alonso. P9, Lance Stroll. Aston Martin's with their own row there. P8, Yuki Tsunoda. Hello, how you doing in the V-carb. P7, George Russell. P6, Oscar Piastri. P5 was Charles Leclerc. P4 was Lando Norris. P3 was Sergio Perez. P2 was Carlos Sainz. And at this stage, it looked like we were in for more of the inevitable. Max Verstappen on pole with a 115.915. All right. Big thoughts on the qualifying session.
there's a lot of little stories that happened throughout qualifying. You had Zhou Guanyu go out, had some like weird looking damage to his front wing and end plate that caused him to not be able to put in another lap time. So he was out. Daniel Ricciardo looked like he might be squeaking through to the next round of qualifying, but then his lap time was deleted, which really sucked because then he was out P18. You had Charles Leclerc, having perhaps a bad qualifying session for him, not really looking like he was getting the car hooked up, especially not like Carlos Sainz. And then you had Sergio Perez, who qualified second row, which would have been really great for him, but then he got a grid penalty because he apparently was holding up Nico Hülkenberg at some point on the track, or in the pits or something. I didn't see exactly what happened there, but he got grid penalty, which, as you know, we'll see when we get into the race here, pretty much ruined his day. Yeah, just all kinds of weird stuff going on. And of course, Lewis Hamilton not making it to Q3, which was very unexpected.
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring up a great point. Yeah, Ricciardo's lap time was good, I think, enough for P10 in the end of Q1. Deleted for track limits on a street course where the walls are right there. So, it had to be kind of one of those four wheels off type deals. But yeah, and that was probably the only lap time that I saw deleted basically for the entirety of the qualifying. So kind of unfortunate for him there. We'll talk about the Kick Saubers and their fun experience when we get to the race. Lewis Hamilton not making it into Q3 was a bit of a shock. He had not had the best Friday. He had said that that was one of his worst Fridays that he can remember in recent history. And then he gets to FP3, and then suddenly it looked like they had found something. But FP3 had some very unique weather in that it was kind of earlier in the day. It was cooler weather. And then it looked like the track and the conditions kind of went away from whatever they had set up there. So, they get into the traditional qualifying and he doesn't get into Q3, which was surprising enough. And it was his own teammate, George Russell, that bumps him out at the end of that session there, just crossing the line with no time left. So, yeah, I mean, and then, the Sergio Perez thing was, three-place grid penalty for impeding Nico Hülkenberg earlier in, I think, Q1. It was investigated. It didn't post till much later or earlier in the morning. He left the qualifying thinking he's going to be in a decent position. And then, yeah, as you rightly say, it's going to kind of turn out to be fatal when we get into the race because he really, really got mired in the field and couldn't come through. Solid results, I think. Good result to see Lando Norris actually out-qualify Oscar Piastri, for me at least. The old Lando showed up because I had not seen him much this year. So that was good. And then Oscar doing right and, getting, I mean, the times are actually very, very close. I mean, that is a theme. And at the time, Max did not look like he was on for pole for at least the first couple of sessions. It looked like it was going to be Ferrari's. And then he just pulled one out of the bag again. Like that's Max when he's pushed. Those are the extra 0.2 that he apparently could bring to it. So I was quite impressed with his pole lap because it was not expected.
Yeah. He had a really pretty strong pole lap. I think I saw an image, that I pretty much see come around every week that shows the physical gap between cars based on their qualifying pace, and he was actually had a pretty strong lap there at the end to take that pole, but it didn't end up mattering in the end.
So we will tease no longer, and we will start off with our back markers here. Starting off, he gets the dreaded DNF, completing only three laps on the day. That is car one. That is Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. The race winning streak is, as they say, over. The other DNFs, the two Mercedes, they did not have a very good weekend on par at all. Lewis Hamilton only managing to go 15 laps. He suffered an engine failure. He also gets the dreaded DNF. And although he made all but one lap, his teammate George Russell also gets the dreaded DNF, although he is technically classified in P17. So yeah, not a good weekend for the Mercedes. P16 was Esteban Ocon. P15, Zhao Guanyu. P14 was Valtteri Bottas. And P13, although he looked good in some spurts, which is a bit of progress, I guess, for them, it was Pierre Gasly in the Alpine. So Cody, I guess we'll start with the big boppers here. What'd you see with the Max Verstappen epic brake failure?
So Max Verstappen comes out of turn one with the lead, and we're all thinking, oh my God, here we go again. He's going to get 10 wins in a row for the second time. He's going to hold that record and then hold it again. We think it's going to be a boring race. And then he, about a lap or two later, he loses the lead to Carlos Sainz. And we're thinking, oh, maybe that Ferrari race pace is real. Maybe we've got something really good on our hands here. And as he continues to go around, you start seeing smoke coming out of the back of the car. You're thinking, oh God, is it happening? Is the reliability streak over? And the smoke just keeps getting worse. We see that it's coming out of his back right wheel well. He's trying to hold on to Carlos Sainz and DRS, but eventually he goes down in speed, pulls into the pits, and as he is braking to slow down for the pit lane, the failure is complete, and we see a big jet of black smoke shoot out of the wheel well. It was quite spectacular. He pulls into his pit spot. They've got fire extinguishers. He gets out of the car. It's over, and we all breathe a little sigh of relief that Max isn't going to win and that we're going to have something interesting on our hands for a change. I'm a big Max fan, and I was kind of looking forward to seeing him just continue to potentially smash more records. He's got plenty of races left. He could still get an 11-win streak out of this season, but it is nice that we didn't have to wait until like the last third of the season this time to see someone who wasn't driving a Red Bull win. So, yeah, kind of, you know, disappointing for him, but I mean, is anyone really feeling that bad for him?
Other than maybe the people in his own team. I don't know who else necessarily really is feeling all that sorry for him, but I mean, my observations were pretty much kind of right on with you. I saw it and I saw it on the timing first. Was like all of a sudden like, whoa, Sainz just like blew past him. Like, you know, he gets the arrow and, you know, the Verstappen gets the down arrow. You just don't see that. And I'm like, okay. Then when the broadcast caught up, I'm like, wow, that was a hell of a move. And then, you know, Max is on the radio saying, well, the car doesn't feel right. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. All right. But all right, let's see what he does when he's in traffic. And, you know, now it's kind of setting up for, you know, maybe we're going to have this kind of big old epic fight. But next thing I saw is I saw the smoke, same as you did. And then the broadcast saw it. And I just kind of started yelling in my head and then eventually yelled out loud, he's in trouble. And that's pretty much what happened. You know, then he slowed down. And, you know, by the time he made it back to the pits, that brake was on. That brake duct had it and was basically completely on fire. And, you know, when he actually gets to the pit stall, he stops and you see the epic big thing of white smoke when they put the fire extinguisher to it. And that was kind of all she wrote. I mean, you know, we never got a chance to see what Red Bull's and Verstappen's race pace really was. It just turned into the, you know, Carlos Sainz, who made the move on track. That was a completely fair and good move. And, you know, whatever happened, you know, maybe it was just kind of destiny that Max was not going to win this one. Thanos is defeated for at least one round here in 2024. The other team that had major league struggles was Mercedes, this especially on the race day. Lewis Hamilton going out with an engine failure, something we don't see a whole lot of. We see a lot of good reliability now with these engines, because that's basically the only upgrades that you could do to the engines is for reliability. So kind of surprising that we see one of the major marks go out with an engine failure, and it just kind of nail in the coffin to what a pretty, really crappy weekend for one Lewis Hamilton, who I don't think is – I think he's counting down the days where he can put on those red overalls.
Yeah, definitely a rough one for Lewis Hamilton. His failure wasn't quite as spectacular as Max's. There's no big fireball from the engine failure. But when you listen to the audio of the onboard, you can definitely hear it. It choked nothing really quickly. So there was no doubt that engine was toast. He's got to be looking at this year's car and thinking that it's no better than last year's car, which was no better than the car the year before that. He's got to be thinking he made the right call.
Yeah, it seems like I said, I think he's got his day counter on. Like, it's 276 more days until I can no longer be here. And that's kind of what it sounded like, especially in his post-race sound. Basically kind of saying, I don't think the car is going to get any better. It's going to be a long year. Da-da-da-da-da. Yikes. Not a great thing. But he had a slightly better day, I guess, than his teammate did, because George Russell's race ended and ended pretty epically on the last lap. While trying to track down one Fernando Alonso, Cody, just before we get into the stewards and the investigation and all that other fun stuff, what did you see? How did you take the incident kind of as it was? And then we'll kind of break down what stewards saw kind of in the post-race.
So I'm going to open with that. I kind of had suspicions of what might have been going on before ever hearing that it was even going to the stewards, but we'll get to that in a second. The first shot you get is that shot of George Russell's car sitting like cockeyed out in the middle of the track on top of its wheels. It looked like a really bad accident from the first image. And, you know, it's really good. George Russell comes over the radio right away and says that he's okay, which is great. You see the replays of the accident and you realize that it wasn't maybe as quite like high speed and impact as that first shot of the car tilted up on its side would have you believe. In that same spot where we've seen lots of drivers going off over the weekend, he goes into the gravel trap. He ends up hitting the wall right at the end of that gravel trap and spins him around, and his wheels pretty much come detached. And then his car ends up like kind of flopping over them, which is how his car ended up in that position. So, but from the onboards right before the accident, he had been trying to catch up to and pass Fernando Alonso for a couple laps, and it looked like he was going to be right there at the end. And it definitely, in my opinion, looked pretty questionable from the onboard, because it looked kind of like Fernando Alonso stood on the brakes and George Russell caught up to him way quicker than he was expecting and lost the car because of it. And I didn't stay up for any, decisions by stewards or anything like that. I pretty much watched the podium celebration and then signed off for the night. But I was not surprised this morning when I saw that he had been demoted to eighth with a 20-second penalty because of that incident. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there, you know, looking at that and saying, oh, I don't know if there's really enough there, but you have to remember that the stewards can get access to onboard data from the vehicles. And I'm guessing that they probably saw that Fernando Alonso was applying the brakes harder and longer than would normally be required for that turn. And they saw that as him, you know, being responsible for that incident, really. And, you know, it's a shame that that happened. I'm sure Alonso was just trying to fight hard. I'm sure he never meant to wreck Russell, but based on whatever data they were seeing, they thought that he was responsible. And from Russell's point of view, I can see, yeah, that that's got some validity to it.
Yeah, I think the data thing that I saw, I've seen a couple. I've seen the actual onboard with the data on it, which is kind of illuminating. The analysis that I saw said that he braked 37% longer on the last lap than he had for any other lap during the race through that corner. So the vibe that I get is actually an old Dale Earnhardt vibe, where he goes, "I didn't even mean to wreck him. I just wanted to rattle his cage a little."
Yeah,
that's what it felt like when I saw it. When I looked at Russell's onboard, I looked at Alonso's onboard from the back. That's kind of what it was like. You know, I'm just going to put my car here and let you decide what happens next. And then, of course, either it's a combination of the dirty air or Russell sees a rear wing coming at him a lot faster than he's expecting, and he either turns to get out of that situation, or the arrow just loses it in the front on his front wing with, you know, the ridiculous amount of dirty air that he just drove into, and he spins out the car. Luckily, the impact wasn't bad, but where he ended up on the track was. I mean, he was basically right in the middle of the track, and he's on the radio screaming, you know, "For the love of God, throw a red flag. I'm here. I'm here. I'm in the middle. I'm in the middle." So you have to feel for George in that moment. But in terms of the penalty, yeah, I agree. I think it's actually warranted in this case. I think they're throwing the book at Alonso here because they want to make sure that this type of thing doesn't happen again. And then the other thing, Alonso's post-race sound did him no favors. Because when they were asking him about it, I got the cat that had the canary in his mouth and the feathers, you know, coming out of his mouth. He knew what he did. He knew he was trying something. And I think he got caught. And that's why it's interesting. There's no appeal coming from Aston Martin on this. They're just kind of accepting the penalty and moving on because I think Alonso tried something and he got caught. And that happens. And they shouldn't. And it's not something we want to be seeing. We don't want to see brake checking or this even potential brake checking that ever happens because this is exactly what can happen because of it. So I get what the FIA is doing. They took their sweet time, by the way. I don't think the ruling came out. I think the race ended at about 1:30 in the morning our time. I don't think the ruling came out till like 4 or 5:30 our time. So they took their time and kept people there a long time after, you know, you would expect them to be leaving to hand this decision down. But yeah, it's the equivalent of a drive-through. 20 seconds gets added to Fernando Alonso's lap time and drops him two positions down in the order. Cody, any other thoughts on this before we kind of move on from George Russell?
Just that I did think, I mean, you know, he said he wanted that red flag. I have to imagine they figured, well, we're on the last lap at this point. We're just going to wrap it around here. And I did think that the virtual safety call at the time seemed like a little weird. Why not just call a full safety car so that you really reduce everybody's speed? Even though nobody's going to actually pull around behind a safety car. Maybe that's why they didn't do it. It was a little bit of an odd situation. Also, I have to imagine, kind of like you're saying, that Fernando Alonso is looking in his rearview mirrors after that happened and going, oh, shit. And lastly, now that you've made the reference to Dale Earnhardt, I think I'm going to have to call him El Intimidador from now on.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go. I mean, he, like I said, he gave the impression, like his post-race sounded like, well, I was struggling with an issue and I was trying to push and I was doing nothing but quality laps. Well, the data doesn't support that. That sounds very made up. He's not looking into the reporter's eyes when he's talking about it. He's looking off and to the right, and it's just like he knew what he did and he got caught. And you know, luckily nothing bad happened out of it. Russell's perfectly okay. The car will be fixed, and we'll move on from it, you know, hopefully. But I do think, especially having seen the data, the 37% thing doesn't lie. Mm-hmm. That's quantifiable. So, yeah. All right. So, P16 was Ocon, 15 was Zhao, 14 was Valtteri. Can we get the Kick Sauber people some tire nuts, please? Because I don't understand what is happening. It happened again.
Three races in a row now. It's a problem. I mean, when it happened the first time, it was a problem. We all thought, oh, man, it's just Valtteri Bottas' bad luck that this has happened to him at Mercedes and now at Sauber. Then it happened to Zhou Guanyu at the last race in Saudi Arabia, and we're thinking, okay, do we see a trend here? And then it happened again to Bottas. So Bottas has got to be losing his mind, thinking that there's no way that he's allowed to finish anywhere near the top 10 because his pit crew won't let him. I don't know if it's an issue with the crew or an issue with the wheel nut, like you're saying, because it seems to be the same issue each time. They got to figure that out because pit stops make such a huge difference in the race. Like, you know, there's a whole reason why so many teams have nailed it down to the point of having, like, you know, a sub 3 second pit stop is like the norm for a good pit stop. And yeah, you lose that much time in the pits, it's gonna ruin anybody's race. And Sauber is in that same boat as Williams, as Alpine, as Haas. You know, they're in that bottom five. They're trying to fight for, you know, single points most of the time, and that type of incident is going to completely ruin your chances, and it can't keep happening every race.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, you almost got to look at inventory or something or equipment and go, you know, whatever we're doing, whatever you know, batch of parts we got, something is defective here. You know, you'd think that you would, you know, order a new batch or have one made and expedite the darn thing and
hope. New wheel guns.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, hopefully they can solve this by Japan because, yeah, I mean, now we're seeing that this is three races in a row. So this is obviously, this is now a thing that they have to worry about. And as a driver, I would hate having to want to come in the pits like, oh God, here we go again. You know,
just give me a one-stop strategy, guys.
Yeah, exactly. I don't care if the tires are dead. I'll ride around out here. At least I'm moving. But yeah, yikes. All right. So we will leave the back markers there. We'll move into the midfield, which saw P12 filled by Daniel Ricciardo. P11 just missing out on the points. The gambit doesn't pay off. Alex Albon in the Williams. But that means three other people in the bottom five do get points. That is P10, Kevin Magnussen in the Haas, and P9, Nico Hülkenberg in the other Haas. Double points for the Haas team, their first double points in a long time. P8 is the aforementioned Fernando Alonso. He finished P6 on the road, was assessed that penalty, as we talked about, dropping him to P8. The benefactor of that was P7, Yuki Tsunoda, scoring 6 points for the VCARB team here in Australia. P6 was Lance Stroll and the other Aston Martin. P5, we mentioned it in the qualifying recap, struggling throughout most of the day. Sergio Perez and the other Red Bull could not come through. And P4, local boy, doing pretty good in this round, I'd have to say. Oscar Piastri in the McLaren. So, Cody, big thoughts in the midfield.
A lot of stuff going on here. For one thing, races like this are going to be what costs Sergio Perez his seat at the rate we are going, because Max Verstappen, out with a problem right at the beginning, had a pole by, you know, not exactly a country mile, but by some margin. So the pace in the car was there. You know, Red Bull has been the pace setter for a very long time now, and certainly at the beginning of this year. So you would think Sergio Perez, even if he's not up to the same levels as, you know, Max Verstappen, most people aren't, that he should still be able to come out of this with, you know, a podium at worst. And he just didn't seem like he had it with the car this weekend. He qualified fairly well. He qualified third, but he didn't do himself any favors with getting the penalty, which set him back. And he could not get the longevity out of the tires. He couldn't get around the stronger, you know, McLaren Ferrari cars throughout the entire race. You know, he's getting held up by certain drivers. You know, he didn't really get held up too bad by Alonso, but he's not doing himself any favors. You know, if fifth place is the best you can manage when your teammate, who, you know, could have been going on to win 10 in a row, you know, is out, it's going to make Red Bull look at his contract being up at the end of the season and being like, you know, there's some pretty good drivers on the market. We have some pretty good guys in house. You know, these guys could hopefully be able to pull out a third place if Max is out or better. And, you know, I really like Perez, but this is starting to make it look like, you know, it's, you know, time for him to be wrapped up at Red Bull, you know, as much as it sucks to say.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's one of those things where, like, here was the golden opportunity. It's a semi-street track. It seems like it would be almost tailor-made for Sergio Perez to you know, pop up and show something. And he had done everything that he was being asked to do in the first two races this season. You know, P2, right on, not necessarily right on Max's heels, but there, and, you know, the clear P2. And he was there pretty much, you know, throughout the qualifying and in the first two races. Here, this was like the old Sergio that we had been spotlighting and had been criticized and critiqued. You know, all of a sudden showed back up. I don't know if Red Bull as a whole were very worried that the same brake setting that Max had might have been on the Sergio car, and they were worried about a similar failure that might have had something to do with it, but if you're Sergio Perez, you have to think the second you hear your teammates out, you have to start taking some risks. And I just didn't see him take hardly any risks. He gets very much held up by George Russell. He could not get around him. But then when he finally did, it was like epic. and he blows past George Russell as if he wasn't even there. Even Russell even said on the broadcast, you know, on his radio, "Boy, that car looks like a rocket ship." Well, what the hell? The rocket ship just seemed to peter out when it got stuck in and mired in traffic. Something happened to his pace. I don't know exactly what it was. I wasn't following his race very closely, but yeah, this is, I think you're absolutely right. If they're going to go back and we're going to see the dominoes that everybody is now setting up for with this offseason, this is going to be one of those examples that are going to be used against Sergio Perez, good, bad, or indifferent, that he might not be in that seat come next year, which would then cause a cavalcade of other moves, because that car, it's still really good. Let's not mince words about it. That car is still really good, and they've got upgrades coming. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I think you're absolutely dead on about Sergio there. Great to see both Haas's in the points for a team that thought that they were going to be dead last, especially when we started testing. This is two races in a row with points. The Io Kotamitsu getting the most out of a team with not a lot of resources to it. What do you think?
I thought it was great. And some of the best racing that we saw yesterday was Kevin Magnussen, or was that Magnussen or Hulkenberg overtaking Albon? I think that was Kevin Magnussen, right?
I think it was Magnussen. Yeah,
doing some more daring moves. Eventually able to get by. Albon was not happy about maybe some of the riskiness that was at play there. But I thought it was really great. It was good to see some you know, little risky, you know, really fighting for the position, and it ended up being worth it at the end, because with George Russell crashing out, that promoted him to P10, and he squeezes out that last ever important point for P10, and Hulkenberg getting a couple points for P9 as well. Yeah, we keep saying that, you know, every point's going to count for these guys at the end. So it was really really good and unexpected to see both of them making it into the points. Another team that's fighting really hard for those points is we're going to call him RB, I guess, right now.
I'm calling him V-Carb.
V-Carb's got a weird ring to it. We'll go with that.
Yeah.
You got Yuki Tsunoda also getting promoted because of, Russell being out and Alonso getting demoted. He's all the way up in P7, which is a pretty hefty amount of points for one of those teams. So, yeah, really good to see him performing really well. It does kind of make Daniel Ricciardo's day look even worse, though, in retrospect, because he's languishing at the back. He, you know, qualified at the back because of having that lap time deleted. So I've been seeing a lot of people talking on social media about how, you know, does this mean that Daniel Ricciardo is actually done, because we've had, you know, maybe legitimate excuses the past couple of years about, oh, you know, the Renault wasn't the best car and he was, you know, doing the best he could with it. Oh, maybe he's just not a good fit at McLaren and they're considering Lando to be the lead driver, so maybe he's not getting everything he should be. But now he's the seasoned driver in this V-Carb car, trying to fight his way back to Red Bull. He's made it very open that is his goal. He's up against Yuki, who is good, but a little peaky, and he hasn't shown anything so far this year. And we know that the car is at least decent, because Yuki managed to squeeze some good points out of it. And even when he hasn't been getting points, he's been performing a lot better than Ricciardo. So, I hate to put him in the same bucket as Perez at this point, but yeah, another guy that's looking like that seat's going to be at risk if he doesn't start figuring out some better performance soon.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird. I don't know that I had, of the five contenders for the second Red Bull seat, I don't know that I had Yuki Tsunoda after three races as being the clear favorite, but maybe that's kind of where we are, at least internally. Notice I haven't said externally yet, because I think there's a contender there who just happens to not have a drive. And with that, we will transition into the podium places. P3, Lando Norris in the McLaren. It's good to see the old Lando back. I made that point in qualifying. That translated into the race. First podium on the year for McLaren, probably not something they were expecting given the characteristics of their car. P2, Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari, solid drive, got probably the most out of what he had after qualifying, which is probably where I think if there's going to be where he regrets the weekend, that's probably where it is. And P1, the man with no drive next year, Carlos Sainz, the only one not in a Red Bull to win a race in the last 24, 25 races is Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari. 2 weeks removed from appendicitis surgery, he comes out with his car and puts on one hell of a show. Makes his, like I said when we did the headline, that guy's quick. Somebody ought to sign him.
It is crazy to think that he's the only guy who's winning any races other than the Max lately. And it's crazy to think that he is out of a drive for next year as things stand. I don't for a second think that that's going to continue. I think he's going to have a seat easy somewhere by the end of the season. We have yet to see where. There are a few good ones open. But yeah, he drove a pretty flawless race yesterday. He had the pace over Charles Leclerc pretty much the entire race. You know, Leclerc was complaining throughout the race that he just wasn't getting the car where he wanted it to be. Meanwhile, you got Carlos pulling further and further off into the distance, making it look easy, you know, making it almost look like a Max Verstappen type of victory. I don't think there's anything bad we can say about it. He drove flawlessly, especially considering that, 2 weeks ago, missed the race, had appendicitis, had surgery. I don't think anyone thought he was going to come back and do just this well. And he said it himself that life is a bit of a roller coaster sometimes. And, you know, it's got its ups and downs. And I'm very happy for him. I think he totally deserved it. I think it's going to put all the confidence of the world in him. And I think it's going to make those top teams with open seats, Red Bull, Mercedes, they're going to be seriously considering him for their seats that could potentially be open.
Yeah, I mean, the importance of clean air as personified by Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari. I mean, he was doing the same thing with his tires that we always give the credit fully to Max when he's, you know, doing his thing with the tires. Was able to just be in control at the front the entirety of the race. He was able to extend his stints, go a little bit longer than everybody else, and therefore at the end of the race he had newer tires than everybody else and could pull out lap time seemingly whenever he really wanted it. So that was just, like I said, a sublime drive, I think, especially considering the guy's got, you know, 2 weeks off of the surgical table, and not to mention, no drive for next year. You have to think someone, you know, people have got it. This has got to start to turn heads. Mercedes is definitely an option. Red Bull might definitely be an option. You know, there was an article I saw came out today that said that, you know, they would consider just about anything at this point. So, and especially given what's going on off the track with Red Bull, which fortunately, I guess we have no new updates on that story. So we're just going to leave that there. For a guy who was the odd guy out, he's putting in the best possible case that he could this early on to say, hey, look at me. I'm still here. I'm still relevant. And I can still win in this sport if you give me the right equipment. So great drive by Carlos Sainz. I'm personally thrilled to see Lando back on the podium. That's always great for me as a McLaren fan. There was a little bit of a, not controversy, but, you know, they did do a team order where they swapped Lando and Oscar around. And there was a part of the race that I thought Ferrari actually got the better of them strategy-wise, because they were going to box Piastri to try to overtake Leclerc. And either the Ferrari was going to try to do the same thing to overtake Lando, but Lando got caught out. They ended up trying to keep him out. They didn't want to box him right away. I thought that was kind of a mistake. They probably should have boxed Lando right away, taken the pain, and gone right after that, you know, when they had the good pace on the fresher tire, because the overcut ended up not working, and having fresher tires at the end proved not to be a thing, as it turned out. So, But, you know, the team order, I thought at the time, was the right call. Lando was clearly faster. He had gotten himself to within DRS, so they waited until the last possible minute. This was not trying to screw Oscar's race over and anything. And I think both drivers admitted that that was probably the right call. Did you, Cody, did you see it that way?
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's not going to look popular based on the venue, because it would have been fantastic to see Oscar Piastri make it onto the podium in his home race. But they were on slightly different strategies. Lando had the fresher tires, had the better pace, seemed to be getting a little bit more out of the car. And ultimately, yes, there's the chance that they're going to be able to chase down the Ferraris and score even more points. And based on the, you know, the difference in the performance at the time, I think they totally made the right call. I think had they not had the team orders, I think Lando makes it around Piastri anyway and just has a lesser shot of catching up to Leclerc. So I think it was worth it. And it just, you know, he didn't have it at the end there to get to Leclerc anyway. I think they made the right call. And I think if we had this happen at any other venue other than Australia, we wouldn't even be questioning it.
Yeah, fair enough. Good points. Any other last thoughts on the race itself? I kind of thought it was much more of a strategy race, a tire race, much more than an actual elbows out fight type of race, as it kind of turned out, especially after Max left. So we were kind of denied, I guess, the fight between mm-hmm. what Sainz and Verstappen could have brought. But any other thoughts before we call it?
No, you pretty much hit the nail on the head there. I think after Max was out right at the beginning, I'm like, oh man, this is going to be like fantastic. It's going to be a real nail biter. And that didn't end up really coming to fruition. It, I would say, has been much more entertaining than the first two races of this season, but definitely not a, you know, an all timer by any means. But it was just good to see the Ferrari 1-2 and Carlos Sainz come back and take this win. I think a lot of feel good moments. You know, it's good to hear the Italian national anthem on the podium, especially with the whole Ferrari team sitting there singing along. It was good to see.
Yeah, and then what this does do is it shakes up actually the standings. We actually have legit standing things to talk about, and we're going to do that in just a little bit. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll kind of leave the race result here. We'll come back. We'll recap where the standings are. Some of this is very fascinating. We'll open it up to our favorite segment, the fan email segment. We've got some of our regulars in the document to talk who wanted to ask us some questions. We'll hand out our awards. I have actually a non-F1 award to hand out for this one based on some things I saw on my television this weekend. And then we have to talk about predictions. And it's not just because they were a lot tighter. They were ridiculously tight. In fact, I don't know, and this will be the tease, I don't know if we're ever going to be able to do what we managed to do this weekend in our predictions. So we'll save that. Come on back. We'll get into it on the other side, and we'll talk about it. So come on back.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop. Grab your flu powder, broomstick, or apparate to your favorite audio streaming service to join the discussion on Hogwarts, a podcast, where Dan and his friends have in-depth chapter-by-chapter breakdowns of each Harry Potter novel. Join the group as they dive into the magical world and discuss plot points, analyze character development, and occasionally go off the rails. Whether you're a muggle who's new to the series or a pure-blood wizard who won't need a remember-all, Hogwarts, a podcast, brings everyone to the Great Hall for a magical discussion. Hogwarts, a podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. This is season 6. This is episode number 8 of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's our 2024 Australian GP race review. You've got Andy, and I'm along with Cody tonight. And we just wrapped up talking about the events of either late Saturday night or early Sunday morning, depending on where you are in the world. But it was Sunday afternoon in Australia when this happened. So we just wrapped up our race review. And now we're going to take a look at the much different standings. One bad Red Bull race. Look what it can do to the standings. So, Cody, if you'd want to do the top 10 drivers, I will chime in with the team standings.
Yes, sir. All right. We still have Max Verstappen in first place driving for Red Bull. That has not changed. His winning the first two races was enough to hold on to first with 51 points due to also getting a fastest lap in there somewhere. However, Charles Leclerc, Ferrari, is now right on his heels with 47 points. And Sergio Perez is only a point behind him with 46. Carlos Sainz, despite having missed a race, is in fourth place with 40 points, so only 11 points behind first. And then going down from there, fifth place, Oscar Piastri with McLaren, followed by his teammate Lando Norris in sixth. So both the McLaren drivers only separated by a point. You have Oscar Piastri with 28, Lando Norris with 27. Seventh place is George Russell, the first of the two Mercedes drivers. He has only 18 points, so Mercedes not off to a very strong start to the season. Fernando Alonso is in eighth place for Aston Martin with 16 points. His teammate Lance Stroll in ninth place for Aston Martin. He has 9 points, which puts him 1 point ahead of Lewis Hamilton in 10th place for the time being.
Yeah, who knew that we'd be looking at P10 and potentially seeing Lewis Hamilton possibly drop out of the top 10 in the drivers if he has another bad weekend next time out. Yikes, scary prospect. But I would think Japan, Lewis Hamilton loves the Japanese circuit, so I think it would hopefully go a little bit better than it did here. But as for the constructor standings, boy, have things gotten a lot more interesting here. Red Bull Racing Powertrains, they continue to lead, but they are on only 97 points. I say only because they only scored the 10 here. P2 Ferrari, hard charging Ferrari, right on their heels. Difference of only 4 points. They have 93 points. P3, McLaren Mercedes have opened up a gap in P3. They check in with 55 points. P4 is Mercedes, the works team. They check in only with 26 points, only now 1 point ahead of Aston Martin. So now Mercedes has gone from right on McLaren's heels to now having a team on their heels. The Aston Martins come in with 25 points. P6, Red Bull, the V-Carb team, Red Bull Honda, they now jump up to P6 thanks to Yuki Tsunoda. They check in now with 6 points. P7, the double points for Haas actually costs them a spot in the constructors in a strange irony of fate. But they go from 1 to 4 points, but they only check there now in P7. P8 is Williams. Alex Albon's P11 is actually helping Williams in a way that you wouldn't necessarily think because of the tiebreakers. So they are up to P8 in the constructors now, but they have no points. P9 is Kick Sauber on 0 points, and P10 still might be there for a while. That's Alpine Renault, also with 0 points. Thoughts on the standings?
It's kind of nutty. I really thought that we still might. This is only the third race of the year. But I thought that Red Bull was just going to be running away with this one, as they kind of have done the last couple years. But for the moment, with Max Verstappen not finishing, it's a close battle, and it really makes you wonder that if say Ferrari brings some really strong upgrades and suddenly they're out qualifying Red Bull on a more consistent basis and able to make some good use out of that clean air, you really never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, dare we say we might actually have a constructors battle on our hands. Dare we say we...
I don't want to say that quite yet.
I saw that and I was like, oh, look at that. This actually looks like it's pretty darn close. But yeah, I mean, this may be a one-off. We may be going, remember back in Australia when we thought we were going to see... Yeah, that didn't happen. But the prospects of it certainly make the remaining 18... or what is it, 21 races, a lot more interesting at this stage of the game. All right. So enough of our takes on what we saw this weekend. We wanted to open it up to your comments. Kudos to both of these contributors who are actually in our fan email segment. These are two of our regulars. I think they chose sleep over racing. So they didn't get these until earlier this morning, but I'm glad that both of them did. So we've got our two normal contributors, Rachel Fleming and the formula. So Cody, let's see what we got in the fan email segment.
All right. So we'll start off with our email from Rachel Fleming. Thank you, Rachel. And she says, so where to start on that one? Carlos Sainz, what a way to stick two fingers up at Ferrari. Again, the driver to defeat Thanos, and after coming back from surgery, I'm sorry, but he deserves better than the Sauber Audi seat next year. Are you listening, Toto? Okay, we'll never know if Carlos would have defeated Max, since Max's brakes decided that they had had enough of the possibility of Max winning all the races this year, which after the first two races, I did feel was possible. And I kind of thought maybe it was possible too. Also, Haas getting a double points finish and benefiting from Mercedes having a meltdown. Never have I wanted more for them to finish above Williams than now. That must be deeply embarrassing for Gunter, seeing how well they are doing now. However, I feel some questioning of Danny Ric will get a lot harsher. This is really not enough for him and his form, despite it being early in the season. It really adds fuel to the fire that he might be at the end of his competitive career. A lot of good points there from Rachel. We already kind of went over that. Yeah, we think the pressure on Daniel Ricciardo to perform is going to get even stronger now because he's had a rough start to the year. Also, the double Haas points finish was very nice to see. I'm not sure. I might be a little sorry for Gunter to not be at the team as they're starting out well, but we do have to remember that, you know, especially in, I think was it 2022, Haas had a decent start to the season while Gunter was there and was actually scoring some pretty good points in the first couple races, but we still have yet to see if Haas is going to do anything to keep up with the development race. My suspicions are that they are not, which means we might be in a position 10 races from now where we're looking at Haas and they are indeed down a 10th. We'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of the comments, you know, that Gunther has made kind of were pretty revealing. He's kind of come out and admitted that he thought he spent actually a couple more years too long at Haas. He kind of thought that, you know, maybe he was just so desperate to hang on to what he knew that he was almost pressing too hard and therefore trying to take these home run ideas, you know, as opposed to now what you've seen with Ayu Kodomatsu running the team is they're working with what they have, which was kind of how they started, is they worked with what they had. They got the most out of what they could every day. And that's, I think, the shift there. But I don't think Gunther is feeling embarrassed about it. I think he's actually come to peace with it. I mean, he did the interviews. He wouldn't have done that. Like, he could have declined. He could have said, no, I don't want to be there. But, you know, he wanted to be there because and he saw what his team did and obviously was fine with it. So I think he's going to be okay. I think he will find a job somewhere within a race team somewhere, or, you know, he'll be some sort of a pundit or a commentator if we can ever figure out how to understand him. He does have a very thick accent, and even some of the drivers were having some trouble understanding his questions. But, you know, we'll have to see what happens there. Yeah, we talked about the fact that Carlos Sainz, we didn't get a chance to see the actual fight between the two of them because, yeah, I think you absolutely put it right. Max's brakes said no mas, and we're pretty much done. Yeah, and yeah, Haas's gain is the Mercedes meltdown. And, you know, we kind of touched on that. And, you know, this is kind of unprecedented territory. And they sounded so upbeat after testing. So it goes to show you, you know, I always call testing is lying season. That's when they're lying to you. They don't necessarily know what they have, or they know what they have at that venue. And this is another thing that I've said about Bahrain, that it is such a one-off venue that I don't know that that's the best place to go testing. But there's a lot of economic reasons why they do it, so I understand that. But, great comments, Rachel, as always, and appreciate you chiming in.
Indeed. Next email comes from the Formula. Thank you to them. And they said, the existence of the Australian Grand Prix is all the proof I'll ever need to know the Earth is not flat. I, a sane person, chose to watch on demand Sunday morning. Going into the race, I had a weird feeling Max was in for some sort of trouble. So much for the durable cars comment I made at the beginning of the season. Boy, did it spice up the race, though. We ended up with a very entertaining Grand Prix overall. I'd prefer to see, and my kitty cat being a little jerk and moving my cursor around. Sorry about that. Boy, did it spice up the race, though. We ended up with a very entertaining Grand Prix overall. I'd prefer to see Ferrari fighting Red Bull on merit, but this will do once in a while. Also, McLaren looked to have taken a noticeable step forward in race pace. Yeah, bunch of good points there. Yes, indeed, Earth can't possibly be flat, or else I wouldn't be up at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning still watching Formula One content. But I do think it was definitely, like I said, definitely better than the first two races we had. Overall, not the nail biter I was hoping for, but still fun to see someone who is not a Red Bull driver winning. And yeah, McLaren looking really, really good. It looked in the beginning like they might be able to put up with the fight against Ferrari, and ended up not coming to fruition, but they're quite strong. I think they're going to get a lot closer once they get those upgrades that they're anticipating bringing around the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. And if anything, they're definitely showing that they're pretty clear of Mercedes at the moment, at the very least.
Yeah, the Mercedes pain is definitely the McLaren gain. And it was kind of interesting. There were a lot of reports that said McLaren were going to start to bring some small upgrades, nothing really big. And then when the show and tell report came out, I was actually very curious to see, okay, well, what did they bring? And it said nothing. So it was like, well, okay, what I think their strength is kind of overall as a team, they're really good at figuring out over the course of the weekend what they have and getting the most out of it. There's a clear progression. To watch them practice on Friday can be some of the most frustrating watching of your life because, one, they don't run the same run plan as everybody else all the time, and two, they're usually not putting great lap times on the board for up until and including sometimes FP3. So I didn't really know what to think about them in qualifying until, you know, I was kind of actually glad, and usually as a McLaren fan, I would say I would want the cooler, you know, cloudy temperatures. But FP3, they didn't look all that great. And I'm like, well, okay, you know, let's see what the weather does. And then it warmed up and it came more back to where they kind of were in FP2 when they had the good race pace. So I said, well, maybe that's better for them. And it turned out that's really kind of what it was. The car is better. It's clearly better than what it was at this time last year. That's no doubt. Yeah. I mean, that's a no doubt. But it's still a step forward even from the good car that they ended last year with. But it has a lot of the same characteristics. And there's going to be certain tracks where they're going to go better at. I was expecting here because what does here have? Lots of high speed. High speed, they're great at. Slow speed, they're still troublesome with. And in a straight line, depending on what angle they want to run their rear wing, they can struggle there as well. You kind of saw that same issue in Jeddah where they, you know, just could not, even with DRS, it didn't seem to matter for them. But they're going to go to Japan, and I think they're going to look really good there because Japan, lots of high-speed corners, 130R, all that good stuff. I think they're going to look really good there. China's a question mark for me, and I'm expecting the struggle bus to come back for Miami because Miami is a lot of hairpins, slow-speed corners, a lot of Bahrain in the Miami circuit. And then after that, then it's the upgrade time, and then let's see what we get. And they've gone pretty well. There are a couple rounds in Imola where they've had it. It'll be interesting to actually see all the teams in Imola actually get to practice because it's been a sprint weekend the both times we've gone there. So, in the COVID year, it was the one practice experiment thing that they did the first time they went back there. So that'll be kind of an interesting thing to see all the upgrades coming through, who's better, who's worse after that. But yeah, I mean, I'm encouraged, but I'm also trying to keep it realistic. But yeah, once Verstappen went out, I had this hope for just a minute that maybe Lando could catch Carlos and we could see some real fun. But it just wasn't in the cards for them. And I think once they kind of realized that, they kind of scaled back their expectations and got the best out of it. And the formula, Mr. Formula, sir, I damn near DM'd you. I didn't want to ruin your race. When you didn't chime in right away, I'm like, well, maybe he hadn't watched it yet. Because I wanted to see, did your son question you about the lack of the Dutch national anthem at some point. I wanted to know. So shoot me a DM if you can. Just let me know if you after you hear this. Did your son wonder why they changed the music on you?
There are, in fact, other winners that are not from the
Netherlands. Yeah, crazy. Crazy to think. All right. So, well, thank you very much to both of our contributors who I know chimed in at some kind of odd times today. So we appreciate you guys doing that. If you'd like to contribute at all to the show and have us react to your comment, feel free to shoot us a DM. We're usually right after the race. Or you can also email the show chatnow@outlapf1.com. We'll take you to that. All right. So we will now transition into our awards segment, and we will start, as we are apt to do, with what goes in the rubbish bin. I have an F1 version and a non-F1 version, but Cody, I'll let you go first on this one. What you got?
My rubbish award is going to go to Sauber's pit stops in general, because, as we discussed earlier, they are not good. They have not been good since the beginning of the season. Each race has had some horrible flub in the pits, and it looks like it's pretty much always related to getting one of the tires on and off. Something with the lug, the nuts maybe. I don't know, but they got to figure it out, because you can't have 20-second plus pit stops every race. You're never going to get there.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I completely agree. They got to figure that out. The sooner they can figure it out, the better. It's no longer funny. It was funny the first time it happened to Bottas, because we all got to kind of do the meme and have a little light laugh, because you think it's never going to happen again. And then it happens again, and now it happens a third time. Something's up. Got to look at those wheel guns. Got to look at the batch of wheel nuts that you have. You might have just gotten a defective batch or something. You got to get this sorted, because, yeah, I mean, if you're one of their drivers, I would say, send me out with do my pit stop on the first lap, and then leave me the rest of the race on the hardest compound of tire and let me see what I can get out of it. But, I mean, good Lord. All right. So my F1 rubbish concerns the last lap and the call of race control during the Russell thing to throw a virtual safety car and not a full safety car. I'm not for instant red flag, but a full safety car has a much bigger effect on everybody slowing down than even a virtual safety car would. Virtual safety car tends to think, most drivers are trained to think, that it's a car kind of off to the side, I can keep kind of running to my delta, and everything is fine. This incident, the crash that Russell had where he was, where all the debris was right in the middle of the road. It was definitely worth a full safety car. I know we have this thing about not wanting to ever finish races under a full safety car. I don't think anybody would have objected to that here. That's what the full safety car is for. That's what should have happened. I was surprised and annoyed with race control for the VSC call there. And as for my non-F1 thing that goes in the rubbish, I like to talk a lot about IndyCar on this thing, and I talk very highly about IndyCar on this thing. But I can't do that this weekend. I don't get what the thing at the Thermal Auto Club was this weekend. It just didn't line up with their brand. The Thermal Club is effectively like a Monaco deal out in the California desert, where only the super rich can own property and go race their sports cars and all that. And you're running IndyCar, which is they're kind of the shoestring budget version of open wheel racing, where, they're accessible. You want to go see an IndyCar race, it's affordable. That's the whole shtick about it. And I guess the minimum price was like $500 a ticket, which is, that's F1 territory right there. So the branding didn't make it up. And then the event itself just did not make any sense to me. The racing I thought was absolutely atrocious. Watch the first 10 laps of the actual main event. Nobody wanted to pass anybody, and everybody was running 6-7 seconds a lap slower so they could keep their tires. That makes absolutely no sense. Who wants to watch that? The broadcast was equally awful. The NBC announcers, who I normally like a lot, didn't seem to want to understand that the powers that be at NBC didn't upgrade their graphics at all for this, even though it's supposed to be a special event. And then in the qualifying, nobody realized that if it's green and it doesn't say two first, that's the gap to P6. Why? Because in IndyCar, typically it's the top six that are moving on in their knockout qualifying. They never reset the graphic. Nobody knew that. It was so frustrating where they'd be like, oh, wow, why didn't that guy go P1? He only went P7. Well, that's because the graphic was meant to do the delta to P6. So god-awful frustrating. You know, if F1 wants to go to the Thermal Club as a one-off event, an exhibition, or have a track day there, that totally makes sense and aligns with the brand that F1 is. It's not, didn't work for IndyCar, didn't work for me. It's just a total own goal. I'd have much rather had an oval race at Texas.
But at least it wasn't for points.
I guess that's the one redeeming thing. And of course, the guy who won it, like, you basically made it a tire preservation exercise. Was who's going to be the best on their tire? Well, the guy who's probably closest to the F1 caliber driver is probably going to win that. And Alex Palou dominated it. So, you know, no shocker there. And nobody wanted to pass anybody because everybody was just kind of happy with where they were. So annoyed with it. But anyway, I'll leave that there. So we'll move on to analysis paralysis. Cody, I'll let you go first here again. What you got?
All right. I'm not sure if my analysis paralysis award is really fully in the spirit of what this award is supposed to be. But I'm going to go with that Alonso's P6 finish was paralyzed by further analysis because we looked into the data from his vehicle. After the race, Stewart saw that he had, as you said, braked for over 30% longer in that last lap at that turn than he had any other lap throughout the race. And that was enough for them to be like, hey, I think you were trying to brake and stop in his face so that he would get tripped up. And he did get tripped up in the worst way. And that demoted Alonso ultimately from P6 to P8.
All right. Very good there. I'm going to go with, again, I'm going to point the finger at my McLaren boys just simply because I thought they should have pitted Lando right after Leclerc jumped him and went into the pits. Like, I got what they were trying to do. It obviously didn't work, and Leclerc covered him off, and I don't think they were even realized that they screwed up the Piastri gambit of trying to undercut him there. But right then when that happens, even Lando questioned it on the radio, well, why am I not coming in? And then they said, well, we're going to try to preserve the tires, do, you know, gave him a code and said, we're going to do this to try to, you know, preserve as long as possible, try to get him at the end. Well, it didn't end up working out. He did have a slight pace advantage. And by the time the dead kicked in on the Ferrari sets of tires, it was too late. So, you know, if there were six more laps, maybe something changes, but I mean, Lando definitely was giving it his all. They were actually going back and forth between Sainz, Lando, and Leclerc were all ding-donging the fastest lap there at the end. So it wasn't like they were both – nobody was pushing. They were definitely trying to push. They just couldn't get up to anybody. We've kind of talked about, you know, kind of the – we've got that dirty air issue still happening in Formula One. It's better than it was, but it's still not great. In a track where it's tough to overtake, this is kind of what you get. So, yeah, thought they should have pitted him right then and there, try to preserve P2 if at all possible. All right, so we will move into our dark horse of the day. I'll go first on this one. I'm going to give this one to Yuki Tsunoda for not only vanquishing his teammate on his home soil, which is a tough ask to do, but P7 is a big result for the V-Carb guys. And then honorable mention for Haas. We talked about, you know, the surprising good form of Haas. And, you know, if this is where they're going to strike while the iron's hot, I'll give it to them now. Good on both of these teams for breaking into that top 10 and taking advantage of some others' misfortune.
Yep. I'm actually going to give my Dark Horse award to Haas because I definitely didn't peg them for getting double points. You know, albeit they did get a little bit of help right at the end with George Russell DNFing. But they'll take what they can get, and what they got this week was a well-earned 3 points. So good on them for that. And who knows? Maybe we'll continue to see that for at least a little bit longer. I really hope that they try to do something to keep up with the development race, so that we don't get to the end of the season and being like, God, they started off so great and then they fell off again. But for now, we'll just have to enjoy it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so we will move into our driver of the day. Is there any other choice? Mine is going to be Carlos, a.k.a. Please give me a drive, please. Somebody, Carlos Sainz, doing exactly what he needed to do in order to make his CV look as good as possible. This guy will have a drive next year. I can stamp and send that one. Just a question of where and how good of a situation can it be. So, Cody, you got anybody different, or are we unanimous here?
We are unanimous. I am also going with the smooth operator, Carlos Sainz. Made it look easy. Did everything he had to do. And yeah, he's just proven that he should have a seat at a top team. He's continuing to prove that. And he's, at the moment, you know, with the exception of having missed a race, he's pretty much outperforming his teammate. And he's looking like he's in the form of his life. And I really look forward to seeing what he's going to continue to do in this last year at Ferrari. And I, for one, think it would be really cool for him to return to Red Bull. I do believe he started his career racing at Toro Rosso alongside Max Verstappen. So it would be really something to see him return there and race alongside Max Verstappen at Red Bull. That's just maybe me dreaming a little bit, but I think it would be really cool, and I think he's got the talent for sure to deserve that seat, and see if he can do better than drivers who have come before him up against Max.
And the interesting thing about that is that would rekindle a rivalry that I think a lot of people thought had been kind of dead. Carlos and Max, when they were first coming up, that was a pretty fierce rivalry between the two of them. So if you somehow could manage to get both of them under the same banner again, that would be some interesting team dynamics, if nothing else. So I'd be on board for that. I actually would think now the Mercedes seat becomes a lot more easy for him to slip in there. That's actually where I would like to see him go. I do still think the Audi thing is a natural connection, but I don't know if this has now changed it. So if this has changed the plan and made him a lot more relevant, I think that's great for him. And I'm hoping for continued good results. He's a guy I'm rooting for the rest of this season for sure. All right. So last bit of business before we hop on out of here is our predictions. And I teased a bit of a statistical impossibility that we managed to figure out. And so, as you know, in our previews, we do pole sitter prediction, we do a qualifying lap time, we do the race fastest driver, and the race fastest lap. And something that I didn't think would ever happen, and we're probably never going to be able to do this again, happened in our fastest lap prediction. Our fastest lap times are not the same. So it's not like we exactly picked the same thing, or we didn't do the Price is Right fail horn. We didn't have to do any of that. But the delta between Cody's time on the slow end is 28 hundredths of a second. We almost nailed this thing. My delta is 28 one hundredths off on the fast end. And so the only equitable way I can do that is to say we both get the point for the fastest lap time, even though we didn't guess the fastest lap time. It was one of those things when I looked at it, and I said, oh, I have to do the math on this. And when I punched the math up, I'm like, okay, there's one. That makes sense. Then I punched up the other one, and it's exactly the same number. I went, holy Hannah. I don't know if we're ever going to do that again. It's one of those statistical weird things. I would call that an unintentional brush with greatness on our part, kind of how we did it. But yeah, so we both get the fastest lap time point. As for the predictions themselves, I actually finally get on the board. I'm like Carlos Sainz. I'm rising, the Phoenix rising from the ashes here. I got 5 points on the weekend. I got the pole sitter. I got the fastest quali time. We share the fastest lap time. I got P11 bonus pick thanks to Alex Albon. And Team Australia did score points this weekend thanks to Oscar Piastri. So I got the prop bet. Cody, I nicked you by one. You got 4 points on the weekend. You got the pole sitter. You got the P2 on the podium for Leclerc. That was a good pick for you there. You also share in the fastest lap time, and you got the prop bet as well. So a fierce battle in the predictions. It's nice for at least for me to step up a little bit, at least put my hat in the ring, and now maybe we can actually see where this thing goes.
I think it's fantastic that we both got the same distance away from the fastest lap, because our times were not even like that far apart. Like, I thought we were going to be like, oh, we're really close to each other. You know, it's either going to be faster than ours or slower than ours, and whoever, you know, whoever was on that end of our close prediction will get it. But for it to fit in perfectly in between ours is really something. And I agree with you. It's never going to happen again.
I was going to say, we probably can't do this again if we try. Even if we do try, I don't think we're going to ever get there. But yeah, something odd. And the quali lap time was actually really close for both of us. I just barely nipped you on that one. So yeah, at least we had our periscopes for the Australian weekend. Let's hope it translates to where I am calling your eventual new home, or at least recurring vacation spot. We're heading to the land of the rising sun. We're heading to it a lot earlier than we normally do in the calendar. The Japanese Grand Prix is in 2 weeks. You gotta love the Suzuka circuit. I'm excited already for it, especially now that we actually have some interesting battles at the top to at least for one round. I'm going to tack this up as much as I can. We may actually see if the rumors are true and Ferrari are able to bring some upgrades forward to Japan, this may be quite an interesting round.
Oh yeah. I think for sure it's going to be an interesting round. I love the Japan circuit. Suzuka is fantastic. A really good track to watch, like qualifying at, cause it's just such a well-designed track. And man, if they could adjust the calendar just a tiny bit, because the place that they have this race right now is in 2 weeks' time. My fiance is currently she's a school teacher, and her school is currently on spring break. So if they just moved this up a little further, I could maybe actually go see it in the springtime. Alas, probably not going to happen. If I ever go see it, I'll probably have to be by myself. But unless you feel like taking the flight with me to Japan, and I can tell you it's a long one.
Well, if you were going to go, I would have to seriously consider, because it is kind of on a bucket list thing. You know, it would be a one time. When would I ever get a chance to do it again? Mm-hmm. So maybe this is the start of another field trip for us. We'll have to see. I never say never to anything, you know. You never know where life will lead you, and sometimes that's how you get the best experiences out of things. So I'm never closing a door on something like that, and I would go see my favorite sport over there. The Japanese fans are absolutely amazing, and it'd be fun to talk as much as I could to them, to the extent that we could. All right, but that's where we're going in a couple weeks. If you've made it this long in the recording, thank you so much for sticking with us. Like I said, we'll be back. We will preview the Japanese Grand Prix in about a week and a half's time. So look out for that. We'll probably do some short form content out of today's episode. So look out for that as well. And then we'll be back for the Japanese Grand Prix and all the fun and twists and turns that that's going to bring. Dare I say, we actually have some fights, at least for a couple rounds. So this is going to get interesting. We've got our fingers crossed. Maybe we see some more fun. So yeah, for everybody connected to the show, it's been Andy. Always fun to do this. And as always, folks, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast, or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.